I had my children on the floor. I was on my favourite blanket that my grandmother gave me on the floor like a cat.
And I realised in that moment the potential of what our bodies can really do as women.
Like, I could feel his head. I could do my own internal, like, yeah, his head, I could feel it.
I was in tears. I was just in tears and overwhelmed with gratitude.
Hi, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast, the podcast that is bringing embodied birth wisdom from women from all over the world sharing their natural birth stories. Don't forget to subscribe and download so that you can always have access to these empowering and positive natural birth stories.
Hi, my name is Anna, also known as the Spiritual Midwife, and I am the Natural Birth podcast host. I'm a midwife and a childbirth educator, a women's work facilitator, mentor, and coach, and I assist women in optimizing their chances of having an empowering and natural birth experience and to truly claim their birth as a rite of passage. If you want to know more about me and what I do in the world, then please visit me at thenaturalbirthcourse.com or connect with me on Instagram as the_spiritual_midwife. Now, if you love this podcast, then please consider taking a moment and leave a review, as this is how you can help us reach more women around the world with these natural and empowering birth stories. The Natural Birth Podcast also has a Patreon page, so if you'd like to shout me a cup of coffee to show me your appreciation for the podcast, then you can do that there. Thank you for all your support and love. It's deeply appreciated. Today on the Natural Birth Podcast, we have Susanna. Susanna is a mama of two from Sweden. She's an osteopath specialized in women's health and pregnancy and postpartum. And she's also a birth worker, doula trainer, and the co-creatrix of the Sacred Birthkeeper course here in Sweden. In today's episode, she will so generously share about her two natural births, with the emphasis on her most recent one, the birth of her daughter only 3 months ago. We will dive deeply into the layers of healing that is offered in pregnancy and through the rite of passage that is birth and motherhood. Curious about Susanna? Find her on Instagram as livmoder. Hi, Susanna, and welcome to the Natural Birth Podcast. It's so beautiful to have you here, my dear friend, sharing your birth stories.
Thank you very much, Anna. Thank you for inviting me as well.
It's lovely to have you here. So I know today that we are going to dive into primarily your birth that you had. Is it about 2 months ago now?
It's very nice timing this for me, because yesterday was the last day of my fourth trimester. So she's 3 months as of last night. So it feels very nice. I did a nice kind of ritual for myself last night with the sauna and the fire and the drum and all of this. And then I knew I was going to tell my birth story today. So it's really lovely.
I'm so honored that you wanted to share it on the Natural Birth Podcast. For everyone listening, I've known Susanna for about a year now since I returned to Sweden. You were one of the first women or people I met that wasn't an old friend, that became a friend, and that is also a beautiful birth worker in the Stockholm area. And it's been a beautiful journey to get to know you and your work in the area. So I'm very grateful that you wanted to share your story here. But before we dive on into this most recent one, you also had your first baby was also a natural physiological birth that we will speak to as well as we begin this journey of weaving the birth stories together. So whatever you want to share about your first, you're so welcome to share with us, and the pearls of wisdoms that you brought into this second birth that we will dive deeper into today.
Sure. So my first birth was my son, who is now, well, he's turning 8 in September. And when I got pregnant with him, I had spent just over a year traveling around Asia, volunteering with my partner and doing various projects. And the plan was kind of to keep traveling till we either ran out of money or I got pregnant, kind of a loose, very loose plan. And so for that whole pregnancy, I was in a very fortunate situation in the sense that I wasn't working. I was kind of snorkeling and going to Vipassana retreats and, you know, just really spending a lot of time in nature. And it was very beautiful. And I had a lot of time to read and listening, but I hadn't been to any births. I didn't have that experience. I wasn't a doula yet. So it was very much about gathering information, right? What is birth? How does it work? What do I want? All of this. So I had a lot of time to do that, which was lovely. And then I came home to Sweden. I think I was about 4 or 5 months pregnant. And I had the whole summer because there was no point in kind of starting to work because I was going to be on mama leave. I should say maybe I hadn't lived in Sweden for 12 years then. So wow. I sort of decided just to come home to have the baby. And then had to say to my partner that we're going to spend, you know, 6 months, maximum a year in Sweden, because he had no interest in living in Sweden whatsoever. So he agreed on that. And now we're here and it's been almost, well, it's been over 8 years now, actually.
Wow.
But so, and then when I went to my midwife and said, you know, hello, so I hadn't had any appointments up till then. And I said, I'm pregnant. I'd like to give birth at home. And she explained to me how it works in Sweden. And I was quite surprised because most of my friends back in England where I'd lived, they give birth at home. Mm. And she told me what it would cost and so forth. And we were really broke at this point because we spent all this time traveling. But she told me about this place called Sophia Hemmet, which at the time was open, sadly closed down, but it was a birth center in Sweden. So sort of not a home birth, but not birth in the big sort of emergency hospitals. And I decided to give birth there. And that preparation or that what I wanted for that birth was very much basically not being disturbed. it was very much about, you know, no routines, no interventions. I wrote a very clear letter about not wanting, you know, vaginal exams or not wanting the CTG monitoring and all these things. In fact, my letter was like incredibly long. And I think I started it with like, I just want to introduce myself so you know a bit more about me. And then it was like a whole biography kind of, and like these books inspire me and these authors and this and that. And like, it's hilarious now that I look back at it. Like, it's very sweet, very kind of, I don't want to say naive, but a bit naive, but like, you know, and it was just like a miracle in the sense that I got a midwife who told me, you know, I've read your whole letter. I've given birth 5 times. I have 5 home births myself, and I understand exactly what you want. Wow. And then she just left us to it. She just left us to it. So there was like, she didn't push any of the normal routines that they have in the hospital. Just press the bell if you want me. And then she was about to finish her shift. And so she came in and told me, I'm finishing my shift soon. Would you like me to examine you before I go or something like that? Because I hadn't had any vaginal exams up to that point. And I said, yes. I don't know. I don't remember why, but like I wanted that anyway before she left. And then she did. And she said, you're 8 centimeters open and I will stay till the baby has arrived. Mm-hmm. And at the time for me, that was like, of course you're going to stay. Where else would you go? Like, I didn't appreciate, like I appreciated it, but it wasn't a big thing in my head. It's like, of course you're staying. Where else would you go? And what I then learned about birth, you know, of course she probably felt that it's not long to go, but as we know, there can still be many hours to go. You never know what's going to happen those last few hours. So the fact that she dedicated herself to like, I'm going to stay beyond my shift. I mean, that's so beyond what I've heard anyone do since that all the births I've been, so that was just absolutely amazing because I don't know how things would have shifted if there was a shift of staff at that point. And I gave birth to him in the water and it was a really beautiful experience. But the biggest thing almost I take away apart from like feeling strong and powerful and good was like this angel midwife. Like she was just amazing. She also came to visit me the day after. She had to like pick up and drop something at the birth center. And she came and sat at my bedside for like an hour and just like praised me and praised me and praised me and lifted me up, like in the sense that, you know, that all women want to be lifted up after giving birth. So I just felt like I was the goddess of the goddess queen of the universe. Like I felt so good after this birth. And this was really the start of wanting to become a doula, because then I started speaking to other women and hearing about their experiences, and, you know, they didn't even read my letter or this or that, you know, hearing all these horror stories. Because before this first birth, I had really only surrounded myself with positive stories and inspiring books, and I'd been quite isolated, like in the countryside, and yeah, I hadn't really heard all the horror stories until after, which I'm also really grateful for.
Yes, because we know how much that really affects,
yes,
both your unconscious and conscious mind. And
for sure. But so I feel like this birth was really, I mean, it was my initiation into motherhood, of course, and but it was really the thing that put me on the course of what changed really my course of work. So I knew I wanted to be a doula. I wanted to, it's like becoming addicted almost to birth. It was like, this was such an amazing experience. I want to do it again. You know, I want to like be part of this, be in this world. So I trained as a doula, and I found some, through the women I met, I found this book, Wild Feminine, and I decided to go and train in holistic pelvic care with Tamilin Kent. And I decided, like, I want my osteopathy practice to be about women's health. So I sort of took courses more in that. And I decided when my baby was 6 months, I opened my clinic space just first, like half a day a week or something. And I really slowly progressed, which was suited me really well anyway, because I hadn't lived in Sweden for a long time and it's like a new business. And so I was like, I really just want to work with women. And it took me like a little bit of time to really step into that fully, or like be like, am I allowed? Like, I really just want to work with this group of, is that okay? Like, yeah, it is. Like, I can do what I want. So I feel like this birth really was the thing that set me on the course of the work that I do today. And all the women's work and the circles and the ceremonies and things. And then I was deeply longing for a daughter. So my first baby was a son, which now I can see was just perfect and as it should be. But I was really longing for a daughter. And so I think when he was about maybe two or something, I was starting to like, oh, let's have another one. And my partner didn't want, and he wasn't sure that he wanted another baby. It was like a bit unclear, but this was a huge crisis for me, actually, like having to get over first, like maybe not. I mean, to be perfectly honest, like the selfish part, whatever you want to call it, it's like I wanted to be pregnant again, and I wanted to like give birth again, because it was so freaking amazing and awesome. And it's like, I just want to do that again. But then I also was really longing for a daughter, and I was so obsessed with this thought that I thought, you know, I have to get over this. Like, I have to come to a place where it doesn't matter if it's a son or a daughter, and then I can become pregnant again. But the feeling stuck with me, and then my partner was unsure, and then I had to go through quite a grieving process of like, maybe I'm not going to have another child. And then I came out the other side of that feeling like, it's fine, you know, this is how our family unit should be. And you know, the work that I want to do with young women, it doesn't have to be with my own daughter, you know, it can be with other women's daughters. And maybe sometimes that's even, you know, the best thing, and the way you can get through to young girls is that it's not your own child. And then it was maybe about a year. So this baby, my daughter's been with me for almost a year, because she was conceived in the beginning of August last year. So maybe about a year before that, I don't remember exactly, but my partner had this huge turnaround where he said to me, you know, one day out of the blue, kind of, I think if we don't have another baby, we'll regret it when we get old. And I was like, what? Yeah, I think so too. But what do you mean? Do you want another child? And it almost came as a bit of a shock at this point, because I was kind of over it. I was like, I'm going to focus on my business and my work in the world, my other work, you know, that I want to do and all these things. So it took me a while to kind of backtrack on that and see myself going through that again. But I have been doing an awful lot of like calling in this daughter throughout the years, and sitting in ceremonies and circles and talking about her and dreaming about her. And like, so I also knew like, this is what's meant to come through. Mm-hmm. So last August, I had this amazing bit of time on my own away, where I spent really for the first time in my life, like time alone in the forest, sleeping in the forest, walking, being by myself. It's like incredible. I turned 40 these years and I realized I never had this time for myself without friends or other people around. And then after that brilliant experience, I went to this women's gathering on the West Coast. And so I came back to Stockholm full, feeling so good, better than I've had in years. And of course, that's when I got pregnant. Like, it's not strange when you look back. But it wasn't in the sense of like, let's make a baby now. It wasn't the feeling. In fact, when I was pregnant, I almost didn't believe it at first. I had to take two tests. I was like, really? Oh, yes. When I came back from the trip and I was feeling great. And I had all that sunshine. And then when I was pregnant, it was actually a bit of mixed feelings. It wasn't just 100% joy and happiness. And knowing all the things that I've learned about perinatal psychology and how the fetus gets affected by the mother's feelings and all of this, there was all these mixed, a little bit of guilt. I should be happy from the very start. And is this baby really, really wanted? I mean, I know she's wanted because I've been wanting her for years, but there were still these things came up to the surface. And on a superficial level, I was thinking or telling people, I have mixed feelings because I'm older now, or what about my business? Having to take a break, or the planning, like these kind of worldly superficial things. But I'm not as fit. Last time I was so strong and I haven't taken care of myself, these kind of things. But underneath that, I know that the mixed feelings or the fear or the hesitation was actually that I knew that this wasn't going to be an easy pregnancy. I knew, now with having had these 7 years of birth work and working with other women, attending a lot of births and holding ceremony for women and seeing their processes, I knew that it's going to be a big journey of, of healing and self-discovery and finding out things. And as much as I want that, it's also like, whoa, do I have the energy for this? Do I have the time for this? Do I dare? Like that kind of feeling of knowing, yeah, it's going to be a lot. So I think that's what was bringing on this a little bit of hesitation. And it wasn't an easy pregnancy. It was, there was a lot of lessons. I really feel this baby has brought me so many lessons from the start. So one good thing has been it's taught me more about, so I'm not very good with boundaries. And because my work is working with people, in groups but also one-to-one, I had to really put the boundary on how much energy I have to do that kind of work, prioritizing myself over making more money, because as self-employed is always like having to make that income come in, prioritizing myself in terms of going for treatments and taking care of myself better, which I haven't done much in the past. So these were all really good things, but there was a lot of sadness during the pregnancy. And there was a lot of, I'm really going into pregnancy now more than the birth. Is it okay? I talk a little bit more
about that. Absolutely. Yeah. Because I think a lot of women would resonate with this, and we don't speak enough about this.
I'm going to get personal now, which I hope I'm not going to regret after, or my partner's going to mind, but I think it's important to share these things. In my relationship, it was just really weird, this pregnancy. I was not letting my partner in, all these things that I teach in my doula training about including the partner and da-da-da and all of this, I just wasn't doing that. So I was just planning the birth, just visualizing the birth, or doing all my things as if I was alone almost. And I wasn't, not just on a spiritual level or emotionally and physically, I was just distancing myself from him. And at the same time that I was doing that, I was also complaining a lot, you don't love me enough, or you don't take care of me enough, or feeling sad that we didn't have this really close, loving bond and relationship. But I was making that impossible by how I was acting. It was just really confusing to me, super strange, and a lot of grief and sadness. And when I was visualizing my birth, I was seeing it as me and my best friend, who's also a doula, and like I have so many doula friends, so I was like, I could have all these women around. And I knew from week like get go what midwife I wanted there, and I booked her like straight away, and it was like her, and I just saw these women. And with my partner, I was like, okay, I knew I wanted to have a fire, so like he can be the fire keeper, he can take care of my other child, he can be like the holding of the space, but like I want these women around. And I even had a conversation with my doula colleague who I teach the course with at the end of pregnancy. And I was kind of saying, you know, this is how birth used to be. And this is like birth is women's business and the men, blah, 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 all this talk. But the reason I share this is because this was like on a more superficial, this wasn't a mind level. This was on like me trying to argue, why am I feeling like this? And I'm so glad I had this big insight and shift towards the end of the pregnancy. And it was one night when I was very upset and very sad and crying a lot and having bad dreams. And then my partner woke up and kind of saw that I was upset, but kind of said, how are you, or something, and then fell asleep and started snoring. Like, and what I wanted was him to like pick me up and hold me and say he loves me, everything's going to be okay, and I'm here for you and these things. And he went back to sleep. And I went into some kind of hysterical breakdown, like some kind of really, really, really big upset. And it was like I saw in neon letters, like written on the wall, I think in English, like, you don't deserve to be loved. And it was, I was so sad and so upset. And then I sat with these feelings and I went to some craniosacral therapy, and things came up in that session, and it was so clear to me what this was about. And basically, I can't remember where I first heard about this, and I can't give you a reference, but I'm sure other people have heard about this, and for me this is like really true, which is that when you're pregnant, like when you're a mother, when you're pregnant, then and then when your children grow up, there is an opportunity for you to heal, or like material from that age of your children come up to be healed. And this is like something that I know, and I felt before, like when my son started school and all of this, but somehow I hadn't connected the dots, and I've been so busy like working with other women and going to birth. So this was like when I had stopped working, it was like 2 months left to my birth. And I was like, okay, you know, I suddenly opened up this space to like, what do I need, or what's going on for me? And so here I was. So material from when I was in my mother's womb were now coming up to be healed.
Wow.
And when I was in the womb, my biological father didn't want me. When my mom got pregnant, he didn't want me. So in the beginning of the pregnancy, he was pushing for her to have an abortion. And then when that was too late, he was pushing for her to promise him that they would put me up for adoption, basically. And I don't know much about this because it's a sensitive topic and we haven't talked much about it. And I even like feel like flushes of stress coming through me speaking this out, because I'm like, wow, I haven't talked to my mom about this, and is this okay to share? But I feel like I also have to be able to own my story.
Yeah.
And she's what I've heard is that there was never any doubt in her mind that she wanted me. So on the one hand, I know I was wanted in that sense. But of course, if one parent doesn't want you, not only is the fetus going to feel that, but it's also going to make mixed feelings in the mother, of course. Yeah. So she definitely didn't have an easy time when she was pregnant with me. And I have, for as long as I can remember, had a lot of issues around not feeling loved just for being me, just for being born, but like feeling like I have to perform and be good and be amazing and do all these things to be deserving of love, basically. I also went to the Royal Swedish Ballet School, which maybe wasn't the best thing for a little girl like me. It was like really not good. So I also had all that training of like having to be good and be judged all the time and compare yourself to others and all these things. Anyway, to not make this story too long, it became clear to me that there was a mistrust or something that had to be healed about the relationship to the father. And of course, my partner is not my dad, and he has all the capacity in the world to love me and hold me and be the dad and the partner that I want. But I think somehow I was projecting this onto him, some kind of doubt that he could be this person. So this is also funny. Like, I knew from the beginning that I wanted this doula who's also my best friend at the birth. And I'm a doula and I teach other people to be doulas. And still, I couldn't open up to my partner about wanting to have this woman at my birth. And part of me was thinking, of course, like, I'm a doula, I have hundreds of doula friends, he gets it, like, he probably knows. But we didn't talk about it. And I was so afraid to hurt his feelings somehow. Like, this, you know, this is like me as a doula teaching is one person and Susanna is like another person, right? Now it's about us. And so I still hadn't talked to him about it. And at this point, when I had these insights, I was so glad, because when I was thinking of birth, I wanted this friend to be the emotional support, this closest person, the person that I would look into her eyes and she would hold me and make me feel loved. And my partner to be more in the periphery. Because I thought birth is women's business. You see how I'm justifying this, right? And what I realized now was, it's not what I actually want. It's not what I truly want. If I'm really like sitting and listening to my heart, I want my partner to be there and to love me, the father of my baby to be there and to love me. I want my doula to do the doula stuff. I want her to be the one to get the things and fix the pool. And, you know, I want my partner to be the person. And I was so glad that I realized this before birth and before, because now I could tell him, look, I want this doula there, but this is her role. This is how I see her role. And this is how I see you supporting me. And I was so stressed about, before this insight, I was so stressed about teaching him stuff. You know, he's not reading the books. He's not listening to the podcast. He doesn't know how to do this and this and this. And the birth date was getting closer and I was getting more and more stressed. So this was also so nice. And when I had this insight, I was like, look, relax. He doesn't need to learn anything. I have a doula and a midwife who knows those things. He just needs to be present in his heart, in his body, and love me and be there. Like, it was so, it made things feel so simple. It was just wonderful. And I even felt like, even if he can't do that for whatever reason, because he has his own journey, it was healing for me to have these insights. And I felt like I've already done like a little bit of the healing work for my daughter, and like, I was happy about it.
Thank you so much for sharing that. This is really the pearls of wisdom that this podcast is here to bring to women, you know, talk about these things, these real things, and the opportunity that pregnancy brings to, as you just brought to surface, like heal ourselves, but also heal our lineage, you know, our mothers, our grandmothers, you know, we carry so much. And what you just brought to the surface is amazing. So thank you so much for sharing
that. You're welcome. And sometimes it's easy to forget how far we've come and like how we don't have. I mean, so my mother was born in 1960. So I haven't actually asked her this, but I'm pretty sure that my grandfather wasn't at her birth. So like the men, like, so my father and that generation would have been the first to attend births. And so they wouldn't have been able to support women in the way that they need, right? Yeah. And then my partner and his generation, like the work that they do and how they are able to show up for birth, that's just like amazing. It's just incredible. Yeah. And then I'm also so glad because my son was at the birth. That was another big insight, was like, okay, what do I want? How do I want my daughter's experience to be? And the role of her father is like the one in the kitchen fixing the drinks, or the one who's there with us, you know? And what do I want my son to see, who I wanted or was hoping he was going to be at the birth, the role of his father to be? You know, because he's going to be observing that, and that's going to imprint on him and be part of how he can show up for birth.
Yeah.
So another big difference with this pregnancy and the other, because I was thinking, why did all these things come up in this pregnancy? So what was wonderful was, of course, because I'm now a doula and I've attended a lot of births, in this pregnancy, there was absolutely nothing to learn in the sense of like the mind to learn. There was no reading that had to be done. There was no information gathering that had to be done, like, at all. So there was this space opening up for these things. And really, that's something that I wish is like, I'm so glad when we have people coming on the doula course that haven't given birth, because like, wow, you're getting all this information now. That's amazing. Or when someone gets pregnant who don't know a lot about birth, I encourage them to, like, if you want to do reading and research, do it early. Don't wait. You think, oh, it's 9 months, I'll do that later. But later, you don't want to be doing that. You don't want to be in the headspace. So do it as fast as you can in this beginning, or ideally even before.
Yes.
So that was lovely. Like, there was none of that. And I'm also teaching a sacred birth keeper course. So I've been sitting a lot in ceremony during this pregnancy, which has been lovely as well, and having that support from others.
So let's dive on into actually, you know, so you found out you were pregnant, you didn't believe it, you had to test twice. And then, you know, you shared so much about your journey in pregnancy. So let's dive on into
to the birth.
Yes. Did you have any signs of labor approaching for you, like physically or spiritually, emotionally, mentally? Did you have any signs before it started that it was coming on for you?
Not really. I had only like a very physical sign that the baby was laying low, is that about a week before she came, I got hemorrhoids, which I've never had before, and it was horrible. And I think I was due on the 2nd or 3rd of May, and my birthday is the 27th of April. So I was turning 40, and I had this just a gathering with my family, and I was laying on the kitchen sofa because I couldn't sit up because it was so painful, like lying and being fed. So that wasn't fun. And that was actually a lesson in that too, because I went for treatment where someone manipulated my pelvis. It was a beautiful treatment, beautiful practitioner, nothing wrong with what she did. But I felt after that treatment that the baby came very low. And it did make me think also of the work that I do. It's like, you know, when there are no issues, like maybe gentler work, because I felt a bit like that happened a little bit too fast in the end, like unnecessarily, because she came very low in the pelvis and I got these symptoms later because she was really pushing towards the back. So I love being pregnant, but just because of this pain, I was like, okay, she can come now. I don't want this anymore. And there was a little bit of a worry of like, is this going to affect? I mean, I know when everybody kept telling me, and I know that's like, there's so many other sensations, this pain is going to be, you're not going to notice it. But it's just, you don't want discomfort in that area, basically.
No.
And then my partner's birthday is on the 30th of April, and he had said from the start she's going to come on my birthday. And on his birthday, I woke up early to make him this birthday breakfast, and I just felt like I was really tired, like extra tired. But then we had the breakfast, and then he has this tradition of doing this guided walk thing on his birthday. He's been doing that for many years, so he was going to go off and do that. And our son had been stomach, like vomiting and stomach sick for the last 2 days. So I was also thinking, oh, no, now, and am I going to get sick, and how is this going to turn out? But this morning he felt fine, which was great. So he felt fine. And I was just feeling a little bit of like period pain, kind of something a little bit, but no like clear sign. And then my partner went off at like 10 in the morning. And at 11 or 11:30, 12 or something like that, I had the mucus plug, what I think is the mucus plug going. I was like, okay, that's fun. knowing that, you know, it might still be some good days or weeks. Maybe not weeks, but at least too many days still left.
Yeah.
And then I think about midday, I started to feel like, oh, but there's something here going on. So I contacted my midwife and my doula, and I have another friend who's also a doula who's going to document the birth, who's going to take photos. So I just let them know, like, hey, I think today or tomorrow maybe the baby's going to come. And I let my partner know because he was going to have his birthday lunch out in a restaurant, but it was just around the corner. And we weren't going to go because my son had been sick. So I just told him, go to your lunch, but, you know, I can feel something and I might call you to come home early. But I did feel like, I think I told them like today or tomorrow, but I think I felt like it's going to be sooner rather than later, because I put a story, storybook to listen for my son in his bedroom. And I just had like an hour by my birth altar, and I had made a drum for my daughter. So I was playing that and singing, and I had collected this spring water. So I was drinking that and reading my affirmation cards and doing all my little, you know, rituals. But I think I just had this sense that like, okay, I have this chance to do this now, and I don't know if it's going to happen later, you know. So it was kind of plugging me into this experience of grounding me into that.
Do you want a natural birth, mama? Then the natural birth course might be for you. Do you see birth as a rite of passage and an important and transformational event that you'd like to feel fully empowered in meeting? Are you like many other women realizing that it is time to take back your power as a birthing woman in the birth space and birth your baby your way. Would you like to feel calm and confident as you birth your baby with all the tools you need in order to meet the labor sensations naturally and be ready, body, mind, and soul? Do you deeply down know that your body was made to birth your baby and that you have all the inherent power and inner wisdom to do so? Are you looking for holistic midwifery wisdom and guidance to assist you and give you all the evidence-based information you need in order to feel fully sovereign in your decision-making around your pregnancy and upcoming birth? Then the Natural Birth Course is for you. Find out more at thenaturalbirthcourse.com.
Not so long after that, it already started picking up a little bit. So I went to bed and had a little bit of a rest. And I think at 2 or 3, my partner came home and I sort of told him to prepare the room, and I made a bath for myself, which was really nice. Like, I had a lot of baths at the end of pregnancy, listening to my playlist and having these lovely scented oils. And so I did that. And I also told him, like, you have to make food for our son because later it's going to be too late, you know. So I was still in this mind up in my head where I could like boss people around or tell them what to do or think straight. But that only lasted a little while longer, and then I was off into labor land. So I had told my midwife lives quite far from town, but she was in Stockholm because she was going to go to the theater. So I was like, yeah, that's fine, go to the theater. It was in the afternoon. And then call me before you go to the dinner and check in how I am. And the friend who was going to photograph, I just sent a message like, you can come when you want, you know, you're welcome whenever you want. And she was there like within the hour. I think she didn't want to miss it. So that's lovely. So she was the first one to arrive. I had been in the bath for maybe an hour. And because my doula wasn't there and she's a doula, it was just natural for her to step into that role because my partner was in the kitchen cooking. So she just started guiding me a little bit with her voice. She just touched my arm, just with this firm, nice pressure that I also teach people to do, that usually would feel lovely. And when she touched me, it was just so painful. It was just so intense. And I remember being very surprised and saying, you cannot touch me, like, just no touch. And this is something that really surprised me because I love massage and I so much like touchy-feely person. And throughout birth, I could have hardly no touch.
At this point, did you actually, so you had contractions at this point?
Yeah, at this point, they were quite regular, actually. So it was probably about 3 or 4 o'clock. And they were, like, at this point, I had to focus. I was like gradually getting inwards and having to focus more. And as I was getting out of the bath, so it's maybe 4 o'clock or something, 5, I don't know exactly. But the midwife calls and I'm like, no, it's fine. We're having a really good time. You can go to the dinner. Don't worry. And then I hang up. And then my friend says to me, actually, I really think she should come now. Is it okay for you if I ask her to come? And I'm like, sure, whatever. Like, that's okay if you think so. Like, I didn't really mind. But thinking back, I think there might have been a little bit of that part of me who's like, I don't want to ruin her dinner. You know, if she has plans, she should do that and she'll come. So I didn't feel like I needed her at all. But it's nice to have my team there. Like, I want those particular people because I love their energy and I love them and I want them around. So I think my friend read me right, you know, that's like, no, ask, let's tell her to come.
Yeah.
And I left the bathroom and went into the room, and I had put we have a very small flat, and I had put, so there's this one room that's like the living room and my bedroom. And during pregnancy, usually I sleep in the loft, but I had bought this huge bed because I wanted to be comfortable. And I was like, this is where I'm going to spend my postpartum, right? It needs to be comfy. So that takes up most of the room. So I had put because I was envisioning myself like dancing and moving a lot. So I had put the birth pool right up against the corner, which if I knew how birth would unfold, I would have put the birth pool like in the middle so they could move around, because I didn't need much floor space. It was like so intense. I didn't move as much as I thought I would. But I found a spot on the floor and I was laying there for a bit. I think they were filling up the pool maybe. And then my doula arrived, and shortly after the midwife arrived. And I think I said hi to my doula and kind of she gave me a drink and something. But really at this point, I was already off. I have no memory of really ever looking them in the eye or connecting with them. Like I was off, but I knew that they were there, like in the space somewhere. And that was really nice. And so I was on the floor a bit and I was moving a bit. It was very intense. Contractions were already very, very intense and short breaks. And it wasn't, I remember being surprised that I couldn't quite move the way that I thought, like leaning over was kind of feeling very painful. I had to be quite upright or leaning backwards. So there were these signs. I mean, this is the double thing, right? I have a lot of knowledge about the anatomy of birth. I teach about the anatomy of birth. I teach about pelvic anatomy. And like, I can really envision all these moves that the baby has to make. So on the one hand, like I'm really in my body and doing it, but there was just a few moments in the birth when comes up a little question, you know, like, is there something with how she's lying? Should I? And I think it was only to the point where it was helpful. I don't think it was getting in the way actually, which I'm glad. There's just a little bit of unusual thing here, how I was moving, which I think was actually the way she was trying to get in and through the pelvis. And then I was standing up and swaying and moving. I remember also going to my birth altar. I had this beautiful mala necklace that my friend had made and that all the women had kind of been holding and putting energy into in my mother blessing ceremony. So I was like, I need to wear that at least a bit. So I remember putting that on. And I had a moment of feeling very emotional and tears coming and a nice sort of kissing my partner and being close. And then that made the water break. And the feeling of the water breaking was just sensationally delicious. Like it was so nice. So with my first birth, it started with the water breaking. And so this was very different. And it was just like warm and just like a release, like a very nice release. But then, of course, after that, stronger contractions. And this was the one point in labor where I got a little bit of a, I wouldn't say a blockage, like yeah, a little bit of a hang up that was to do with having knowledge about birth. So, you know how we always go on about like, it's important to pee so that the bladder doesn't become like this huge obstacle in the way of the baby. Yeah. And I hadn't peed since it started. And so I was like, I probably should pee. It's like getting up to the mind instead of staying in the body. So it's like, okay, right, I should pee. And so I made my way to the toilet. And like just moving was so intense and hard. Like I had put this rebozo to be hanging in the hallway. And I was hanging off my partner and it felt so good. And I was like, I should go to the rebozo, but I can't. Like it's just 5 meters away, but it was impossible because it was so intense, the contractions. And so just going to the toilet was quite like a lot of work. Now I think like, why didn't just like get someone to get me a glass and pee, or just pee where I was or whatever. But like I made myself to the toilet because I also know that it's good to sit on the toilet, right? We teach people this.
Yes.
So I went and sat on the toilet and it was horrible. This was the only, and I don't know how long I was there, like for half an hour, but this was the worst part of the whole labor. It was horrible, so painful. And I don't know why I didn't just get up, but it was like this is good for me, you know, I should be sitting here and I should pee. And my midwife is also an acupuncturist. So she gave me acupuncture like behind the knees to try and pee. And someone was dripping mint oil in the toilet and they were doing all the tricks and there was no pee coming. So after a while I gave up and then I could kind of let go of this fixed idea. Like then it was gone. I didn't think about it more, but this was like the horrible part. And then left for the bathroom and then went into the pool. Like, hallelujah. That was just, oh. And I knew I wanted to give birth in water. It was amazing the first time around. And it felt so good and warm. Like I remember being worried that it wasn't going to be warm enough because I had a lot of baths at the end of pregnancy, hot, nice baths, and the birth pool, you know, it shouldn't be so warm. And I don't know who measured the temperature or if they did, but it felt delicious and warm. But the contractions, I mean, nothing slowed down. I was like ready to have maybe a little bit of a slowdown, a little bit longer breaks, but it was just relentless, like very short breaks, very strong contractions. And I think I still think that my daughter wasn't quite coming into the pelvis ideally, so there was like strong contractions to help her down.
Yeah.
My son was sitting on top, so that was nice because we have this loft bed. He was sitting on top of the loft bed, so with headphones and watching a movie. So he was like in the room and he could see what was going on from above, but he was still in his own little bubble. And then now and again, he would take off, well, he wouldn't take off his headphones, so he wouldn't hear how loud he was. He would just like look at me and go, "You go, mom, you go," like, "Hey, yeah, hey, mama," scream, like, very sweet, and take me out of my bubble for a second and then dive back in. And this, in my first birth, I wasn't aware of the music that I had prepared, but in this birth, the music list was very present. It was really lovely. It was like songs that I loved. I had asked my doula to drum, so they were drumming for me, and I have a nice memory of, I have this huge Chinese fan, like someone was being with a fan, doing the cool air, which was lovely. And I was moving around the pool. And then I was only in the pool for about an hour before she was born. But at some point I felt, so I hadn't had any exams, but I decided to feel for myself. And I felt like she was getting close. I also remember I had a mirror that I had said, like, I want this mirror because maybe I want to watch her being born. And suddenly the mirror was kind of there on the side of the pool. So I think everybody had this sense of like, it's getting near.
Mm.
And so I put my hands inside and I put the fingers inside and I put them higher up and higher up and higher up and higher up and higher up. I was just going like as far as I could feel, and there was no baby. Oh my God. This was also like, this was one of the tough moments of the birth. I was like, where are you? Where are you, my daughter? No. Wow. And I mean, I know, again, from experience that sometimes the babies come down really fast in the end, you know. But it was just this feeling when I thought I was going to hit her head like straight away, and I could reach and reach and reach and there was nothing. So that was a bit like, oh. And I, because someone filmed a little bit as well, I can hear myself at this point saying something like, it's far to go, or like, I don't need this mirror, it's far to go, she's not coming yet, something like this. So there was a bit of like this, not disappointment, but just this of not hopelessness, but just a bit of something in my voice there that's like, oh no.
No, it's just not fair.
Yeah. But I mean, I know now also that it was like probably half an hour late that she was born. So she did come down really strong and in the end. And
especially when you're a second time mum, like you've already opened the channel. Yeah. When she finally drops, she drops.
Yeah. But it was strong. Oh my God, Anna. It was so, it was such strong contractions.
How did you cope with them? Like, what did you do? Did you have a mental focus? Did you breathe? How did you come, you know, to terms with these strong surges?
Oh, I almost find myself saying, I don't know, which is such a strange answer. It's like, what do you mean you don't know? But it was almost just like riding, like just trying to be present. I wasn't even doing any techniques, or I was just in it. It was fire. It was fire energy, 100% fire energy. It was like, and that's why. So if it's okay, I'll just do a little detour, because when I got pregnant, the one image that came, or the one vision, the one word, the one thing that came to me first was fire. It was so strong, like fire. And I didn't know what it meant. And so I interpreted it as, I'm going to give birth by fire. The most obvious thing, like I'm going to have a fireplace. And I'm a bit obsessed with fires. I've always said, like, I want to live in a house with a fire because I want to be able to make a fire every day. And I don't have a fireplace where I live, and it's so depressing. And we made a lot of fires during the pregnancy. And so the only place I know that has a nice big fireplace where I could give birth was my mom's house. So I spoke to her and explained that I didn't want her there, but I wanted to borrow her house. And was that okay? And it was. And then suddenly, because her home where she's lived for over 10 years, she can live there because of her work, because it belongs to her employers. And then she was suddenly going to retire early and move to the south of Sweden. And this happened sort of in my mid-pregnancy. So my birth, the house where I was going to give birth was like no longer available. And it was quite a crisis for me, actually. It might sound silly to some, but for me it was like, yeah, a bit of a crisis. And it was like the fireplace more than anything. And also that I have not the nicest neighbors. And I had this worry about like drumming and making noise and feeling really free in my expression in the flat in town. And I even went through this phase of like finding various amazing, but still it's just a screen, like YouTube clips of fires on the beach or in the forest, and projecting them big in my living room and thinking, okay, like I'm gonna have this projected huge fire. Like, and it was a silly idea and something that I later dropped, but I had to almost like process these ideas, like how can I get fire at my birth? And in the end, I was like, I just have to let this go and I have to have a lot of candles.
Mm.
But what was so fun then is that, or interesting, is that she chose to come on the 30th of April, which is this day in Sweden when you make fire, everybody make fires. It's Valborg. And so, of course, all over Sweden, there was fires being made at this point. And the Sacred Birthkeeper course that I teach, I couldn't be at that weekend. But while I was going through labor, they were making a fire and singing and drumming for me by the fire. And after the birth, lots of my friends sent me pictures like, we made you this fire and I don't know. And then the energy of the birth was fire. And so her second name is actually Elda, which means to make a fire in Swedish, which I love, this old female name. And it's also like referring to and being an elder in English, which I also really love. But so it was really like, after it was so clear that it wasn't that I was going to give birth next to a fire, she was the fire. She was bringing the fire and like all the transformation that she's bringing with that energy. And like, it really made a lot of sense to me. But anyway, so I'm there in the pool and I love like my beautiful midwife is, you know how in hospitals at water births, they want to stand there with a torch and like light with light between your legs. Like it always amazes me. Like, what are you looking for? Like, stop doing that. So my midwife, you know, with all the faith and experience and just the total belief in birth, she's just, I'm on my knees hanging over the edge of the pool. And she's just with her two hands on my head, just grounding on my head. And she's just staying there. So as the baby's crying and all of this, she's not looking, she's not checking. She's just like with her hands on my head. And at this point, my son's come down from the loft. I guess he's sensing that things are getting nearer, or if they told him, I don't know. And so he's sitting also in front of me, first in his dad's lap, and then he's sitting and just with his little sweet hand on my back, like stroking me, or just, I could take very little touch, but just these two hands on the head and his little hand on my back. And I'm in this position for quite, what feels like an eternity, like a really long time. And there's a lot of noises coming out of me, but more of these noises, like when you have to go to the toilet, these grunting noises. Like at no point did I feel like I was doing anything. Like I was birthing or I was pushing. I was never, like I was just trying to get out of the way of this force moving through. And it was the force and it was the baby doing all. I didn't do anything. I was just trying to hang in there, you know, just like being this vessel or channel. And it was very intense. And as she was being at this point, so she's crowning. So now my son and partner is kind of behind me. So watching her head, you know, and you can see the head. And I tell my partner, like, you can feel her head. So he's just putting her hand in the water and feeling it, which was really amazing to him. And I had this very long playlist that was just going randomly. But the song that was playing was the song that I love, which is The River is Flowing. And it's a beautiful version with this like children's choir. So it was really nice. And there was just this moment where like my partner realizes that it's this song and he kind of makes a comment or sings along or something. So like, it was really nice that he drew my attention to the song. And I think, I don't know if I remember correctly, but I think maybe my midwife was asking like if Gabrielle is going to catch the baby or who's going to, somehow someone is drawing my attention to like, who's going to, how is this going to happen now at the very end, you know, because I'm still like on my knees landing, hanging over, and I feel like I can't move. But as I feel her coming down towards the very end, I sit back. So one leg is kind of kneeling and the other foot is on the base, so it's like I had this asymmetrical position, a bit of turned in thighs, and receive her that way and bring her through. And it was almost like, because there was a long break before with no contractions, it's almost like there are no contractions. I mean, I don't know how to describe it. It's like, there's none of these pushing or like, here comes the contraction, push. It's just like the body is slowly working. She's slowly just working. It's like she's doing it basically, wiggling her way out. Yeah. Really amazing, really strong sensations at the very, very end. And then she comes out and she just stretches her arms in this like delicious stretch. It's like, I have space, you know, out in the water, this big stretch. And she has these amazing black eyes and dark hair. And she just seems so, it just seems so pleasurable, like, to her to come out. And she's under the water. And my son says something like, take her up so she can breathe. And we had explained this to him, but maybe he didn't remember. I can hear my partner kind of crying in the background, and I look at him, and it's just, this is amazing moment. I let her be under the water for a bit. I think I almost wanted her to be there for even longer. And my midwife says, and I know she's only trying to be helpful. So she said something like, when you take her up, don't take her straight up, take her up a little bit to the side, I guess, so she doesn't get, you know, all the water in her face and chokes. But think, like, looking back, I kind of wish that no one had said anything, because I would have wanted, like, this moment could have lasted forever. This moment was just amazing. But it almost became a cue then to take her up, because when you have an instruction of, like, when you do it like this. So it's like, okay, without thinking, I just did it the way, you know, which is, I mean, now I'm really nitpicking. It was beautiful. But thinking back, it was like, I could have just had that moment for like minutes, just drag on. And my son also, bless him, he said really loudly, Mama, jag har en fråga. Mommy, I have a question. And of course, like a 7-year-old, it could be anything. It could be like, what are we having for dinner tomorrow? It could be something really inappropriate. And you know, it's such a sacred moment that everybody in the room goes, shh, like they shush him. Which I also, like, part of me would like to have known what he wanted to ask. And at the same time, it was probably something not related even to this. And then his next question is, can I be home from school tomorrow? And then I take her out and I just put her on my chest, and she's so full of this white fat, like, amazing. She's so beautiful. She's just quiet, looking around. I am so high on the, you know, the cocktail of hormones. I just feel amazing. I call my partner over for a cuddle. And my son is sitting next to us also, and he's commenting how sweet she looks. And then we have this beautiful moment in the water. But then after, I don't know, maybe 5 minutes, I don't know, time is such a, you know, who knows how much time passed, but not that much. But then I start shaking a lot and feeling like I have to get out of the pool. So I step out of the pool, and then my bed is just like 2 meters away. So I just get into the bed, and then loads of blankets and hot water bottle, and just like trying to get myself warm. And I think my son disappears off to his room to read a little bit. I think it was just like a bit much, or he was needing a moment for himself. And the midwife and the two doulas, they also leave. So we have a little bit of a moment, just the three of us, just landing there. And I don't remember if it's them, maybe. It's like, oh, it's only 3 months ago and it's already a little bit blurred. But I know we have this beautiful moment where it's just my partner and me and Yuna. And I have this drum that I made for her at the end of pregnancy. And so my partner is playing that for her. This is a kind of welcoming. And then after a while, oh, and my doula is bringing me this amazing thick, like really thick, warm broth to drink, which was just like, wow, amazing, delicious. And then I'm getting like these after contractions. I don't know how much time has passed, but quite some time. And I just felt like I don't want to be pushing. I don't want to do any more. Like, I don't want to do any work. I feel with all these feelings that I have about like birthing myself and receiving the baby, doing all these things, I just don't have those feelings with the placenta. I have like, if someone can help me, please help me kind of thing. Of course, I don't want anyone pulling on the cord or doing anything like that or pressing on my stomach. But like, if you can help me a little bit, please do. You know, so at this point, this, I was really grateful for the midwife to be there. And so she suggested I come down to the floor. And then she just helped me a little bit. I think the placenta was already detached there. and sitting there. So she just kind of took it out, but I didn't have to do any like active pushing or anything like that. And then it's lying a bit on the floor, the placenta in a bucket, the baby on the breast a little bit. We were just like looking at each other and admiring each other. And then we got back up to the bed. And then I don't know for how long time passed, but after a while we were going to do this cord burning, which I've never actually been to a birth where that has happened, but I've seen a lot of photos and read about it, and I just thought it seemed so beautiful. So we had prepared the things for that. Oh, and yes, and my friend who had made me these little beeswax candles for the cord burning ceremony, she had also made me this taller candle, which is beautiful, which is two candles that are sort of entwined. So it has two wicks at the top. So it's like the mother baby candle. It's really beautiful. And when I had my moment at the birth altar at the very beginning, I had lit this candle. And my friend had told me, this candle is going to burn for the whole of your labor. And I lit it, and I know at some point, I don't know if it was then or earlier, I thought, you know, it's not going to, because it's going really fast. I remember having that feeling. And as I was lying there in bed with my baby, my partner said, Susanna, look at the altar, look at the candle, and the candle is going out.
Wow.
It was just like magical. So it literally lasted the whole of labor. And so we burnt the cord, and I played a song that I've sang to her a lot during pregnancy. And yeah, it was just really beautiful. And then after some more time had passed, I wanted the midwives to just check my perineum and my pelvic floor. And she did that. And that was great. There was no injury whatsoever. So that felt really nice, obviously, because it's not nice to have to, well, deal with that. There was literally no blood with my first birth as well, also like no blood. So I wasn't afraid of bleeding a lot. But what was something that I think is nice that I would like to share is that we did this fire ceremony around fears some weeks before birth. And I also asked my son to do it, to just write down the fears that he had around birth. And my son is, I mean, he's seven, and I make him do rituals sometimes, and he never wants to do them at first. Or he doesn't want, oh, I'm going to go out and do ceremony again. No, I don't want to. And then when he gets into it, he always enjoys it. And it's always acts like it's strong for him, you know. But so he wrote down two things only, and it was afraid of blood and afraid of screaming. And one of the best things about doing this with him was it was a chance to talk about these things, what it means, what it can mean, what it's not, and so forth. So that felt really good to me. And then I was like, put it on the fire, and he was a bit, you know, making his eyes, how do you say, rulla med ögonen, you know, a bit like, I'll do it, but it's a bit silly, it won't work kind of thing. He was putting rolling on the fire. His eyes at me. And then he came to me about 3 days after birth, and he said, Mom, do you remember that thing we did with the fire? It worked, because there was no blood and there was no screaming, because I think he didn't see like any blood. There was not even a drop of blood in the pool. Of course, there was a little bit when the placenta came out.
Yeah.
And of course I made a lot of noise, but it's not screaming as if, you know, he thought of screaming. It was just all these like primal noises. And also for most of it, he has having headphones, but it was just really lovely that he felt like he was part of making that happen. You know, he did this thing and it turned out true.
Yeah.
And in the end, he also was nice that he came back into the room. It's about midnight now, I think. And he came back to our bed and sort of crashed next to us in bed. And we all slept together that first night, which was really, really lovely. And the midwife and the doulas helped sort of clearing the pool and cleaning the room. And this is also something I had asked them beforehand, because I've been to births with home births where the midwives are sort of part of the system, where they just don't help with the cleaning. I find it so strange, because this is also part of what is nice to have support at the birth. It's not just, you know, there's so many things to have support with, and cleaning after is actually a big one, so that as a family, you can just be together and focus on the baby and each other. And it was just an amazing experience. It was super nice.
So beautiful. An amazing story. I love all the bits and pieces that you've shared. There's one thing that I was thinking, just to clarify for anyone listening who, you know, might never have seen a birth or is a first-time mom. You mentioned that your baby was covered with this white gooey stuff that's called the vernix. For anyone listening, you know, that is such a beautiful thing when they come out and have this natural moisturizer all over their bodies. And, you know, for anyone who might not birth at home or in a birth center with midwives that love this, you know, to know that this is not something that you want to wash away. You know, this is something you want to keep your baby full of, even though it looks like for some babies, it's like a lot, right? Mm-hmm. Like just absolutely covered with it. But it's beautiful, and it will sink into the skin just in a few hours. And
it's fast, you know, right? Even so when it's a lot, it's fast. Yeah. And then it's like, they just had this amazing moisturizing treatment. They're so, I mean, they're soft anyway, but now they're just soft beyond belief. Like,
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's such a beautiful thing. And I just wish that we wouldn't have a culture that is so prominent around the world where you wash a baby after birth, mm-hmm. or you wipe that off. So mm-hmm. yeah, just for anyone listening, you know, if you do birth in hospital, just know that don't let anyone wipe your baby's beautiful mm-hmm. moisturizing natural mm-hmm. cream off. And then you also mentioned that you were shaking, which is also a great thing to just mention, because that's such a natural experience that a lot of women have. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, when you've gone through, if you look at animals in the wild, right, and mm-hmm. they get scared or something, you'll see them shake, right? Mm-hmm. It's that natural thing that the body does to shake mm-hmm. off any adrenaline over, mm-hmm. you know, produced adrenaline. And at birth, we have that natural mm-hmm. surge at the birth of the baby, mm-hmm. which, you know, had in that yes. moment of shaking. Yes. So it's nothing that's dangerous. It's not something yes. pathological. It's actually really normal. It's a yeah. positive thing for the baby or for the body to just shake
yeah.
off.
It's like your nervous system regulating mm. itself. Yeah. And I think it's nice that you mentioned the adrenaline, because there's so much talk in the birth world about oxytocin. And of course that's the hormone, but like adrenaline gets really bad rep. Like we also need a lot of adrenaline to birth our babies, and the baby needs a lot of adrenaline to cope with the strong contractions of being pushed out. So there's a lot of that. It's a powerful yeah. good hormone also. Like yes, it can stop contractions, and yes, it can get in the way, but like it's powerful and we need it and we get a lot of it.
Yeah. Towards and the you end. Know, absolutely, that's the key, isn't it, that it's towards the end, because mm-hmm. obviously if it's early, that's when it can stop, mm-hmm. but at the end we want that to happen mm-hmm. for sure, just as you said, for both mom and baby. And that's why if you're really you know, far gone and you do get scared, some women will just have a baby. You know, for some, if you're not too far along, it'll close up. But if you're close to birth and something dangerous about to happen, you know, your body's so wise, it knows that, okay, you're really close to having a baby. We're just going to shoot that baby out, get it out, right? Mm. Yes.
So never thought of it like that.
It can really go both ways.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was dark moon when she came, which also was nice to me because she was conceived at the dark moon. Wow. And her name, her second name is Elda. Her first name is Yuna, which is old Portuguese, meaning dark river or black river. So it was this song that was playing, and it was dark moon, and she came out in the water. And I really wanted to have the water and the fire in her name. So again, we had such a long list of names. And then the names just came, you know, when did she come? How did she come? That also felt really lovely. And thinking back also afterwards, I mean, there's so many lessons that have come through this, and I'm only at the end of my fourth trimester. So, I mean, I'm still harvesting things, and it's going to go on for a long time from the birth. But I'll just share one little thing, which was towards the end when it was very intense, I felt like I felt this need that I wanted praise, that I wanted everybody in the room to tell me how amazing I was and how good I was doing. And they were very quiet. And talking to them after, they were like, well, we didn't want to disturb you. And like, you were doing so amazing. And we didn't want to like, you know, do anything that would like be getting in the way. And I thought of this because when I'm a doula, I'm usually very verbal in terms of encouragement and praise. Before, when I thought of this, I was thinking, like, why I couldn't speak up? Like, I couldn't speak up. I couldn't say it, you know, because it was so intense that I couldn't like get it out of my mouth, but I really needed that. But now I think that actually it was perfect that I couldn't, or like the lesson is I don't need it. I did amazing without it, because I have this strong need of like needing approval, needing other people to tell me, you know, I'm good and so forth, that so many of us have. And actually I wanted that then, and I was sad that I didn't ask, but I didn't get it at first. And now I'm actually glad, like it was perfectly the way it was, because I needed to learn that I don't need it. You see?
Yeah.
I don't know. I just wanted to share that.
I love that. I love that.
Because they could have done that a lot and it would have felt amazing at the time, but I would still be in this belief that that's what I need.
Yeah. And I love that you're sharing all of these things, because this is the right, isn't it? Every time you birth, this is the right. This is where you have this opportunity, pregnancy, birth and beyond. There's so much wisdom, and it's like amplified. It's just there.
so readily available for you.
Mm-hmm. And this feeling,
yeah.
And also the feeling loved, which was really like the main thing that I realized that's what I want to be feeling, that I got that too. So that also feels very healing. Like I felt very loved. Very loved. Like I don't have memories of like connecting with the women in the room. I knew they were there and that was super comforting. But I have several moments during the birth where I met the eyes of my partner. I saw his face and there was so much admiration and love in his face. Like I want to just like store that in my brain forever. It's so wonderful. And the postpartum has been so full of love. I felt so loved by my partner, but also like by the community of women in my life. It's been really very healing. Super nice.
Yeah, you've been really good at preparing your postpartum and really making time for ritual and mm-hmm. nourishment. Mm-hmm. And I've been in awe of seeing mm-hmm. the little that you've shared, you know, on your social media and that I know of. Mm-hmm. But, you know, just I love that for you. Mm-hmm. And I love that you show that for other women. It's been
great. So I signed up to do this innate postpartum course with one of my idols. Her name is Rachelle Garcia Saliga of Innate Traditions. And so I had started that before I was pregnant. And it's like, right, I'm pregnant. And now I'm going for 9 months, I'll be learning about postpartum. And a lot of it I knew from before, but it was just such a good reminder of like what's important and what a woman needs. So I was like, okay, I don't have an excuse. Like I have to live this now. I have to do it. I have to test it out. And it's been truly amazing. Really, really amazing. And another big piece of the love thing for me, which became this theme in this pregnancy, and what I feel she brought, was I hadn't shared that with anyone because at that point that was quite a new revelation to me. And then I had the mother blessing ceremony, and the woman who took the photos at the birth, she gifted me this long rebozo shawl. And then another friend who's a doula had this idea of passing it around the circle. And the song that she had chosen is this beautiful song that just, there's just a few lyrics. I think the only lyric is like, oh, I love you. I love you. Oh, I love you most of all. Yeah. It's like, that's the only lyric. And then there was like these 25 women or something, just passing this long rebozo around. And they slowly like hand. So I saw it being passed like by hand to hand to hand to hand. And they were kissing it and they were stroking it and they were whispering sweet words into it. And they were like putting it in the face. Like, it was so... And I was sitting there hearing these lyrics, and it was like I could picture my baby being passed around to all these like hands. And then they covered me with this rebozo. And then, I mean, it was just amazing. It's just amazing. And when I carry her in that now, it's like, I never want to wash this. I can't bear it gets. It's like, I just, So there was just these little things that happened that connected into this story of what I needed and what I needed to learn and what was the medicine for this, that this daughter brought. So it feels really beautiful.
Wow.
And I can't believe she's here. I can't believe she's here. And the timing is also so divine, because if she had come earlier, I wouldn't have had these years of my work progressing in the direction that it has. And I feel like I wasn't ready to be the mother of a daughter back then. Like, I've learned so many things that I needed, and I have so much yet to learn that I now feel even more motivated and inspired to do, because now it's not just for myself, it's also for her. Mm. But like, I'm ready in a whole other level now than I would have been, you know, 6 years ago, if she had come then. So the timing feels really divine and perfect.
I love that for you. Thank you so much for sharing your birth story. Now, if you had a first-time mama in front of you right now, is about to have her first baby, and she really wants to have a natural and empowering birth experience, what advice and pearls of wisdom would you give to her?
So I think one of the main things is actually that I almost want to say to not go looking for pearls of wisdom from other people, like unless you really spend the time to feel inwards and listen inwards first. Like, I think this is so key, because the things that come from within you, those are the kind of true pearls of wisdoms for you. So I would say, like, if you can do activities that take you out of the thinking mind, so not reading, not listening to podcasts necessarily or to other people's advice, but just being in nature or meditating or dancing or breathing or whatever you do to just slow down and feel inwards, and then trust that thing, that you know what you need. And then when you know what you need and what you want and what's right for you and your baby, then I would say go and search for the information or the wisdom or the teachings that confirm what you already know, that support you in your knowing, that kind of exalts and strengthens that, and not the things that questions it. And I wouldn't say like that's the way to go through life, to not look at the things that questions what you know. But like with birth, I think that's really key, because we do know. So it's like find what you want and what you know, and then go looking for or listen to the things that strengthens that which you already know. Does that make sense? Or am I just talking myself into a circle?
Absolutely. Like, I think it's really important.
Because otherwise it's not embodied somehow. It's just an advice, but you're not really feeling. It's just another thing that you're learning somehow.
Well, I guess when you do a lot of internal work, when you cultivate a relationship with your intuition and your inner wisdom and knowing, then whatever you hear or see or taking from the outside goes through that filter, right?
Yes.
And so then when you do go out and you do maybe your research, you'll know what's for you and what's not.
Yes.
Because what maybe resonates. You don't know, of course, if you maybe haven't really been in the birth world or you have no idea about birth. And obviously you do want to maybe take in some information, but to strengthen what I understand from you, to strengthen that inner voice and that inner intuition.
Yes. Yes. Yes, that makes sense. And then if I had anything else, it would be to lift your eyes from the horizon, like up to the horizon a bit, so not get stuck just at birth. So of course, it depends on how late in pregnancy you are. But if you haven't thought about the postpartum at all or don't know anything about it or haven't heard the word postpartum, then I would really encourage you to learn a bit about that before you get there. And the two sources that I recommend the most is either the Innate Traditions or Kimberly Ann Johnson is a really good source with her book, The Fourth Trimester. She has a very nice little fourth trimester workbook also that's nice to kind of fill in after birth. But just educate yourself a little bit about what you will need after, and those around you, if you can, educate them a little bit. And then just one other thing would also be to just, this doesn't apply to all women, but just to not be afraid of support, like to not think that you have to do it by yourself. Like being alone is not necessarily stronger in this context. It's like, don't be afraid to have support. Like, I almost don't think that you can have too much support. You can have the wrong kind of support, and then maybe it's better not to have those people there. But like, don't underestimate support, and don't think that like alone is stronger. Like with my first birth, it was really like, I'm going to do this by myself and no one's going to disturb me, you know, no one's going to come into my bubble and I can do this. And that also worked and was a good experience. But this time was more about like letting people support me, letting people love me, letting people hold me, and trusting that that will be what I need and good enough. And, you know, not just good enough, but more than that, but like letting, allowing that in. And I think that's a much better
experience. Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of rewiring that needs to happen for all of us around asking for support, allowing support. Like, I feel like a lot of us carry as human beings, like this deep, like, am I worthy of love just for who I am, you know? And right. Like, so, and that doesn't come from us. Like that is just, that is our society. It's our lineage. Mm-hmm. It's our karmic imprints, all of these things, right. That weaves into the story that we have. I think most of us. And so it's such a healing thing to actually dare to ask for assistance and help and receive it in the way that it comes to you, but to actually allow other people to support you. It's a gift to be the one that supports, like both of you and I obviously know how it is to be someone who serves others. And it's a huge honor and privilege and a great joy to give. And so when we ask for support, we give other people the gift of giving to us.
Yeah.
And it's actually not a burden, and it's not going to make them resentful. You know, we have to trust that they will also then say, oh, no, I can't do this. And, you know, and see the ones that say, yes, I will support you. I want to be there for you. And and they start healing that distrust that we have to maybe our sisterhood or to our society of not, you know, just loving us for who we are and being there when we need them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Susanna, for sharing your beautiful birth stories.
Pleasure. Thank you for asking me to come on.
It's been such an honor.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. If you love this podcast, then please consider sharing it. Leave a review or make a contribution on our Patreon page. And if you want to connect on social media, then find the podcast on Instagram as The Natural Birth Podcast. Thank you for listening.